Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie. Low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning, Reg. How are you? Welcome back.
Thanks very much. Missed you, buddy, but are back now, back in the hot seat, and looking forward to another great weekend. I had a great weekend last weekend. I took the weekend off and I took the kids down to Leitrim, of all places, with Frida.
Lovely Leitrim.
Lovely Leitrim, and it was lovely. It was absolutely amazing. Went down and we had a fabulous time down there. Went to Carrigan Shannon for a bite to eat, and yeah, it was good. Kids enjoyed themselves, so a bit wet, but sure, there you go. That's Ireland for you. It's still a bit wet. The storm coming in today, and we're trying to go to rugby matches later, so we'll see what happens. How was everything with you?
Yeah, I saw a lovely quote during the week with the clock's going forward. We can enjoy an extra hour of rain.
Yeah, it's pretty much the way it's been, all right. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, it's been,
I know.
God, it's been brutal here. It's affecting all sorts of things, sport-wise, and different things being cancelled and postponed. But I think the rugby later on should still go ahead. There's no way they're going to cancel that for a drop of rain. So we're going along to that later on and see what happens with it.
Well, they won't cancel the snooker, and anyway, we'll be okay.
Yeah, and it's coming to final time as well. So Ronnie's made his way into the final. He's up against Mark Allen or who else have we got?
Mark Williams. Their semi-final starts out today, best of 19. It's actually in a new venue, Manchester Central, right in the heart of Manchester, here, Red. Yeah. Beautiful venue. Beautiful, beautiful venue. And right next door to the old G-Mex, which was an iconic sort of concert place. Oasis played some great gigs there during the 90s. Yeah, it's very, very famous. But yeah, lovely spot, new venue, the Tour Championship, which is the top 12 in the world. And O'Sullivan, who's top of the rankings at world number one, dominating again, got through last night in, you know, immaculate fashion. Great match, 10-7 in the end. It was 7 all at one stage with Gary Wilson. And he's just, even at 49 years of age, he's just producing still impeccable snooker, Reg. It's just quite incredible. Mm. Absolutely incredible. And yeah, he's looking forward to playing the winner of today's match in Sunday's final.
He seems to be, I saw him quoted, he's trying, he's saying not to be too hard on himself and just...
Yeah.
Except that he's playing well and be nicer to himself, I suppose.
Yeah, he said he's been in a dark place with sort of tinkering with his cue action. He's always sort of trying to find some little extra nuance, you know, to try and improve himself, tinkering with this and his cue action, his cues and stuff like that. But he's had Steve Peters here. He said he's been talking to him quite a lot over the last little while, just to calm himself down. I think it's not only preparation for this tournament, but also, of course, the World Championships in a couple of weeks' time, you know, and he's going for his eighth World Championship, which, of course, would supersede Stephen Hendry's 7, who was the all-time. Well, he already has 7, O'Sullivan, but he wants to supersede him and be undoubtedly the greatest of all, which he already is, and anyway, in everybody's eyes, I suppose. But yeah, still incredible. He's already won 5 tournaments this year.
Yeah,
won well over £1 million. And if he wins this and the World Championship, which is $500,000, he might even break the $2 million barrier, you know, which is unheard of in our sport. Like,
you know. Absolutely. You said something there now, and I have to pick you up on it because I'm intrigued about tinkering with his cue action. And I can never understand this. So, look, Padraig Harrington would be another example of this. And Padraig's an amazing golfer. And after he won the Open, I heard him often talking about how he's trying to change his swing and tweak his swing. And then you're saying about Ronnie changing his cue action. And I don't understand that when, like, as you said, he's made $2 million, he's close to $2 million already this year, Ronnie. God knows how many years he's been world number one, he's 7 world titles, all that. Why would you bother changing something that's working that well?
I know, it's incredible, I think they're...
How can you change it? Is the other question, Ken.
It's just, I mean, it's quite a technical sport in a way, in the way that you deliver the cue, you know, your backswing and stuff like that. And even your bridge hand, you know, how close it might be to the cue ball at the end of the tips, at the end of the cue. You know, there's also your grip as well, the way you grip the cue. You know, if you grip it differently, where you get more power, you get through the cue ball a little bit more. You know, it's how you line up into the shot as well. There's all sorts of ways that you can try and change a little bit to deliver the cue better. But, I mean, as you said, he's such a genius. You know, the way he's played since he turned pro, like in 1992, himself, John Higgins and Williams, all turned pro the same year. He's had just such an incredible career. But there are always, sometimes you get into little bad habits, you know, that something might creep in and then you try and change and you try and play.
And are you doing that yourself? Do you find yourself doing
Everybody's trying to do something different. Yeah, you know. If you find something that you're really happy with and then you just stay with it, but all the players would be very, very similar, you know?
Okay, right. And I'm just interested to when you said that because it always struck me as odd that when you're winning titles, you're winning championships.
Then again, he's
to improve.
So talented.
Yeah,
and so talented as well. I mean, the way he goes about it, he finished off in wonderful style last night, another century, you know? Mm. And Gary Wilson, in all fairness, last night, put it up to him to come back to 7-all. But O'Sullivan, he has this innate ability, just he can go through the gears, you know, and just went up an extra gear and just pulled away in the end. He's quite incredible. And, you know, I said to some of the people who were coming there yesterday, you know, just meeting a few people, guests and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I say, you got to relish these times when you haven't seen him play live before, just to go and see a genie. It'd be like someone like a Tiger Woods in golf,
yes,
or, you know, a Messi or Ronaldo in football, you know, and just to see them live just once, just the way they play, and say you were there. Yeah, absolutely.
I saw Mark Allen, who we know is in the other semi-final, but he was a bit critical during the week on a few things, especially the format. What was that all about?
Well, I tell you, this tour championship, it started off as the player series. So it starts off with the Grand Prix, which is the top 32 players on the one-year list. Then that's the next tournament is the top 16 players, which is the players championship. And then it finalizes, culminates with the tour championship, which in history times was only the top 8. But what they've done this year was made it the top 12, because if they had top 8, some of the matches might finish early. The crowd might not get to see too many frames if a match went like 10-2, like O'Sullivan's match went 10-2. But on the other table, they were only starting out in the match, so they played the full 8 frames. So basically, they sort of had matches starting and matches finishing, rather than if they just had one match all day, that it would finish all on the one day and the sort of crowd wouldn't get the value of the ticket. So it's not a bad idea in hindsight, to be honest, you know?
Overall, the players would be in agreement with what he's kind of saying and would go along with it.
Yeah, I think when it was explained to him, you know, from some members of the WST, Boris Snooker Tour Board, that was the reason behind it, you know. And I can understand a little bit why, you know, you sort of break it down to make it a special top 8 event. But in hindsight, when you see with the value, and of course with the crowds here, it's been fantastic as well. It's been sellout since, the last few days. And been queuing around the corner to get in, because when it's free seats as well, they all want to get in early to get the best seats, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a really good idea. But yeah, you can understand why they want to have it extended to 12, you know, instead of just keeping it to 8, you know.
Absolutely. Okay. So who are you predicting Ronnie to go all the way then?
Yeah, and you know something, I mean, Mark Allen, who's having a good season himself, he's won 3 tournaments. He's playing another great, who's Mark Williams, who produced one of the best clearances that we've seen all season, possibly of all time, and certainly in the top 5 clearances of all time, against Tom Ford to get through. It's going to be quite an interesting match, this semi-final. I think Mark Allen might have the edge because of how he's played this season, but I wouldn't discount the wily old Mark Williams, you know, and what a final that would be. Two of the guys who turned pro in the same year, 1992, still at the top of the game after all these years, and to play in the tour final championship would be quite amazing. Great story.
Okay, well, look forward to that and see what happens and how it all unfolds. On to the football then, I suppose. It's really starting to hot up. Liverpool sitting there on 70 points, just two ahead of Arsenal. Big game tomorrow, of course, United taking on Liverpool. It's been a cracking season this year, hasn't it, with all the to-ing and fro-ing in the top three the whole time.
Yeah, it's been a brilliant season, you know, for those three teams. And, you know, an intriguing one as well. I mean, you know, it's been, they've been like swapping places, haven't they, at the top of the tree. Liverpool are there now. They seem to be in a, you know, in prime spot. But still a long way to go. And, of course, they're visiting Old Trafford on tomorrow, you know, which is going to be an interesting game, particularly after that cup match. But, you know, after United losing such a dramatic, did you see it during the week?
No.
The Chelsea game. Oh, my goodness. You know, they were 3-2 up and then 8 minutes of extra, like, overtime, like, and they score, they get a penalty and then score dramatically in the 100th minute to win it. It was just, so they might be totally deflated, United, you know. So it might be a different game to the cup game.
Yeah.
But still, they'd love to sort of turn Liverpool over and put a little stop into that gallop to win the Premiership again, you know. But yeah,
you wouldn't
great.
Say it's no in Arsenal either if you did it.
No, you wouldn't say no. Yeah, so it'll be all eyes on the weekend. But yeah, it's been a great Premiership.
Yeah, what did you make of because City there obviously chasing as well on 67? What did you make of Pep and the kind of way he's been carrying on and the public dressing down? And then when he was approached about it in the press conference, he was kind of, you know, he was a bit irritated by the whole thing.
A little bit tetchy.
Yeah,
a little
wasn't
bit
he?
Tetchy.
tetchy was the word.
Yeah. I don't know why he does that. He comes on the pitch.
Attention.
You know, and sort of berates. Yeah, I mean, people would say that straight away. You know, maybe it's just his passion sort of boiling over. You know what I mean? That he has to get it out and go and speak to the players straight away. But maybe it is for the cameras as well, you know, even though he says it's not. But he's still an amazing manager. I mean, he's so passionate. He's brought a different style of football to the Premiership. And, he's still great to watch, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I love his mannerisms on the side of the pitch, you know. And a bit like Arteta, in a way, you know, that they can't control their emotions, you know what I mean? Which is great to see, you know.
Yeah, but it's definitely, I think it feels less orchestrated with Arteta. It feels definitely like it's a spur of the moment, reactionary type of stuff. Whereas it just feels with Pep, you know, I want the cameras, he knows they're going to be on him. And even when he was in the press conference, he kind of said, I do it for attention. I do it because the cameras are going to be on me. He was trying to, you know, be sarcastic and say the opposite of what it actually was. But I think everybody was probably going, yeah, here it is.
I mean, there's so many cameras at these,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, of course he does, you know.
Now, my favourite part of the show, I might be a little bit biased, but it's time to talk to the one and only Will Slattery of the Irish Independent and Left Wing podcast, as it is rugby time and the Champions Cup. Morning, Will, how are you?
Doing well, Reggie, how are you?
Oh, never better, I have to say. Looking forward to getting over to the Aviva later on for the big game that will be. But before we get to any of that, I suppose, I want to have a quick chat with you, Will, about the women and see there and the announcement that Cliona Maloney has been recalled back into the Ireland squad after a 2-year exile. A lot of people have been calling for that prior to this and saying that there was all sorts of reasons why it wasn't happening, but she has been brought back in now and I suppose is somewhat needed to steady this ship because it was disappointing again for them against Italy, albeit again a little bit unlucky.
Yeah, just on Cliona Maloney, I think it's important that she was brought back into the fold. Like, her form over the last couple of years has certainly warranted her inclusion. She obviously, for people who don't know, when Ireland qualified for the last World Cup, she kind of responded to some quotes from Anthony Elliott, the director of women's rugby at the time, saying he was kind of spreading slurry with his comments about how the players were to blame. And then she kind of mysteriously vanished from the squads thereafter, even though she was playing over in England at a very high level. And at the time, Greg McWilliams, the subsequent coach, said it was a form issue, but it was hard to kind of square that with how she was actually playing. So it's good that the new regime have brought her back in. Yeah, and he, as you say, disappointing last weekend. Like, what, you know, watching that game with the tries they left out, they're like, you know, we've been singing Bavin Parsons' praises, but she dropped an absolute clanger for a walk-in try. Like, some of the handling in and around the line just wasn't good enough. Like, when Scott Beaman after the game was saying we put in a performance that ordinarily would win the game, I actually agreed with him. I didn't think it was like PR spin coming from a coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the chances were there, and I'm feeling a bit better about the team because I didn't know where they were at. So the Wales game now becomes massive. Like, they need to get some points on the board because obviously seeding, you know, for other tournaments is massive. But I do think they're moving in the right direction, but they'll just be kicking themselves with basic handling errors that let them down.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, the France result, albeit they lost, it was a much, much better performance. And Italy, you know, there are just games like that where you're pulling your hair out going, as a coach, you're looking at it going, geez, how on earth have we left that behind us? And you think all the gods are lined up against you when stuff like that happens. But I couldn't agree with you more. I feel that there's positivity around the squad. I think Kleena coming back in will be another positive move and will strengthen the squad no end. So I think they are going in the right direction. I think that's the reality of it. And we always knew this was going to take a bit of time. This wasn't going to be fixed in one coaching cycle year, you know?
Yeah, and I just think it's important that they can crystallise that with a result because they obviously they were on a long losing streak in the Six Nations, and you know, we've been kind of saying for years that the Six Nations is the shop window for women's rugby, not the Sevens. They've kind of gotten the players back on board. Now it's time to get a result on the board. Obviously, it was good to see a decent crowd at the RDS, and there was like 6,000 people there. I think Musgrave Park, I'm expecting like a good crowd there. They always come out to support the under-20s team when they play there too. So yeah, I agree. I think the steps have been made in the right direction. They've gotten more of their best players on the pitch, which is obviously a prerequisite for success, and now it looks like some of the things are coming into place too, and I expect them to beat Wales, but they have to be better than they were against Italy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, moving on. So from that, lots being made of the great state that Irish rugby is in. We're Six Nations champions again. We were kind of ranked one in the world for a long time, and we're still up around there consistently. And then you look domestically and you're kind of going, what's going on? Kitschoff leaving Ulster again, CEO's gone, coach is gone, Connacht facing dilemmas in their URC and Challenge Cups. You know, on the outside, everything looks rosy in Irish rugby, but then when you're kind of drilling down into it, there's some serious issues that need to be resolved pretty quickly within the lower, well, I wouldn't say lower, but, you know, in the provincial side of the game, isn't there?
Yeah, well, like, you know, if you're being honest, like, the health of Irish rugby is tied to the health of Leinster rugby. It's no surprise that, say, the year when Leo Cullen came in and Leinster really struggled in the Champions Cup, they lost 5 or 6 pool games. That was one of Ireland's, you know, weaker seasons in the Six Nations. I think they, you know, they 1-2, drew 1, lost 2, which by Ireland's standards is a really, really miserable Six Nations. You know, ultimately, it's the Leinster backboning the Ireland team with a smattering of the best of the rest for the most part over the last, you know, kind of 5, 6, 7 years. So, yeah, when you go below the top line, like, to be fair, Munster have won the league last year. I wouldn't say they're in poor health or anything. Like, obviously, literally, the health of the players has been an issue this year. They've had a lot of injuries and stuff like that. But yeah, Ulster and Connacht are both of them are not in a good place at the moment. Ulster, like, the Stephen Kitchoff thing is bizarre to me. Like, I know, yes, there can be some maybe positives of him leaving in the sense of freeing up budget, but the idea that him, a marquee Springbok, leaving after 1 year of a 3-year deal is being spun as a positive shows just how far away they are from where they maybe were even a couple of years ago under Dan McFarlane. Like, this is one of the worst signings in the history of Irish rugby in terms of a marquee signing. Like, a guy we know to be great is packing up and leaving after one season because of, you know, kind of financial issues across the province. Like, and then, you know, you kind of, to be fair, are always kind of competing against the odds. Like, they're working off a smaller budget, a smaller playing pool. They're kind of relying on getting bargain signings. Like, Andy Friend seemed to have the minus touch when it came to recruitment. You know, there looks to be a bit of a drop off in that sense. So I know Santiago Cordero, their big marquee signing, did his ACL before the season, which obviously isn't ideal. But it's an important weekend for both of them. Like, they've been helped by the French teams of Montpellier and Pau, both picking understrength teams, just to get a bit of positivity back into things. Victories on Sunday will be massive. And I think with the teams that they've picked, they're achievable. But I don't know, I agree with you. Like, the things in both of those provinces at the moment, they don't look great.
As you said, Connacht have always kind of been the poor relations in terms of funding, let's say, and squad sizes. And there's elements of that that you can understand, because the provinces do have to be self-sufficient as well. You know, they've got to look after their own finances and create ways. They can't just be spoon-fed from the RFU. But having said that, and in particular in the Ulster case, you mentioned the fact that Leinster are the force that feed the Irish team, and then that there are add-ons from the other provinces. Now, Munster might argue that there are very important add-ons, namely 9, 10, 6, 4 maybe. Those numbers on the backs of shirts are very crucial to, and I'm sure I've forgotten a couple of apologies if I have, but they're very crucial to that whole structure of that Irish setup. But would the likes of Ulster and Connacht, would they be pointing fingers at the RFU saying we've been neglected for so long at this stage, or is the ball firmly in the court of the provinces themselves for those failings?
Well, I don't see what finger-pointing Ulster could be doing. Like, you know, they've always been able to produce a marquee signing. Like, the issue, someone sent me on a WhatsApp group a screenshot of all the signings they've made over the last 5-6 years. I say 80% of them have been duds, you know? Like, so the recruitment, like, I'd say Ulster fans watching Dwayne Vermeulen start and win another World Cup were wondering what was going on, because he was very, you know, mediocre, I would have said. He looked like a man at the end of his career in his time at Ravenhill. Like, someone like Sam Carter, Australian second row, would have been on a decent wage. He was pretty poor, you know. Like Kitchoff, to be fair, on paper looked a great signing, but like for a loose head, like, so is paying that much money to, you probably want them to be like kind of the cherry on top. Like, you know, adding them to Munster would be massive because their team is very strong elsewhere, whereas Ulster probably have a lot of needs. But for Ulster, Connacht, you know, as I say, are Connacht, they're always going to be in that position just because of their budget, the playing pool. But Ulster, like, they have a robust school system, you know, some RBAI, Methody, steeped in history. They produce a lot of players for whatever reason. I'd actually say the young players they have there at the moment are pretty good. We've seen them be good, but what's alarming to me is how they've regressed en masse.
Yeah.
So James Hume, Robert Ballacoon, Nick Timoney, Michael Lowry. Like, how come these guys all started great and then, like, as effective, they've all taken a step back? Like, Ballacoon is now going to play sevens, it looks like, in the summer. Like, that shows the priority, like, where he's slipped down, that he's even willing to do that.
Yeah.
So, that's the real mystery to me, why the players that are there have been so poor.
Well, then, from what you're saying, it would point more to the coaching structures that are in place, because I agree. Like, when you look down the list of names that are on an Ulster spreadsheet and that they can put out, they're strong names, they're strong teams, they're strong players there that just don't seem to get results. Now and again, they'll pull out a result that you'll kind of go, that's worthy of that squad of players. Yeah, that's what you'd expect them to do. But there's no consistency of it. And you don't know if you're going to get that week in, week out. And I've often looked at Stephen Ferris' commentary on things and listened to what he said and followed him on X and listened to what he said about them. And it does feel to me that it could be fixed with a good coaching structure. And Richie Murphy's going in there now. Successful coach, you know, he has had success at all of the levels he's been involved in. Is that the answer, do you think, or do they need to go even, I don't know, further afield and bring in you're talking about marquee name in Kitchoff, do they need a marquee name in coach?
I don't think there's a budget for it. Yeah, like, obviously it would be great to go out and, you know, I don't even know who's the biggest coach in America. I'm not even sure who it would be.
No,
but, like,
no,
you know, that'd be great. But I actually think Richie Murphy could be what they need. Like, he's a positive guy. Like, you just hear him in the media. He actually seems like he wants to be there. Like, reading his quotes about house hunting in Belfast, and even, like, he was saying all the right things after the Stormers game, I thought, in the media about how proud he was. Whereas I do think by the end, Dan McFarlane was pretty uniformly negative. Like, he was a pretty dour character. So yeah, I do point to the coaching. I think there's a team there that you could be getting a lot more out of. Like, similar to when we looked at the Munster team in the end of the Van Graan era and said, I always thought there was a trophy in that team with better coaching or maybe more freedom for the players to play. And we saw that happen quicker than I thought it would, but definitely. But I think Ulster are good enough to win a trophy at the moment? No. But do I think they're good enough to be better than they are? Definitely. Like, as I said, like, you only have to go back maybe 18 months to a time where, like, people were talking about James Hume as a potential alternative to Kai Ringrose. Robert Balakim started against South Africa in the autumn of 2022.
Yeah.
You know, like, these guys were in and around the Ireland team. Now they wouldn't even be in and around an Ireland squad. It's kind of mystifying to me, as I said, how they've all stepped back. Like, Nathan Doak was being talked about as a World Cup bolter. He isn't, like, he's not even close to getting into an Ireland squad now. Like, you know, I mentioned, a load of guys there. Like, so, first and foremost...
That's what happens, Will, though, when you're involved in a squad that has negativity associated with it and bad results associated with it, then the players themselves, their value goes down rapidly. And even if they're playing well, by the way, even if they're playing well, their value goes down because they're associated around that negativity. And I couldn't agree with you more about Richie. Yeah. I think Richie brings positivity to it, Richie Murphy. And I think... sometimes we get caught up in the whole thing of the marquee name and just forget to look to our own. And I think maybe he might bring some fresh ideas and give them a bit of freedom because maybe they haven't had the freedom to express themselves.
Yeah, two things. One on Richie Murphy. Like, I do agree that, like, his record deserves a job as a senior coach in Ireland. Like, you know, winning all those Grand Slams, nurturing all that talent. And I think his... first port of call, forget about, as you say, forget about Mackie name. Stephen Kitchoff was a bust. It didn't work out. His first job needs to be getting the guys he has playing well again, because I think if that alone will make a huge jump. And like Stuart McCluskey shows that even though they've been bad, Ulster collectively, he's risen above that and been able to be a contributor for Ireland, which shows that the other guys could have done similar for whatever reason they haven't been. Like Ireland in the Six Nations had a, you know, back three injuries galore, but Balakoon wasn't sniffing a squad. Why is that? He was the coming man a very recent time ago. So I think Richie Murphy has a lot of kind of raw materials to work with there, and I don't know what they're going to do with that Kitchoff budget, if they can redistribute it or if they just need to use it to keep maybe the guys they have. But either way, I think there's a nucleus there that hopefully, if Richie is given the job, which I suspect he will be unless it goes, you know, very pear-shaped between now and the end of the year, I think he's a bit to work with.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on to this weekend. So the Tigers come into town a little bit later, the Leicester Tigers taking on Leinster in the Aviva. Leinster 17 point favourites in this game with the bookies, and you can kind of understand that, that's for sure. But the Tigers are a bit odd in the way that they've been playing. Again, they can pull out big performances and big results, and this isn't one that Leinster can afford to take lightly, is it?
No, but when I saw the Leicester team sheet yesterday, any chance I thought of them, like, they're missing. So if you even look back to that Twickenham game when Ireland lost, Ollie Chesham and George Martin were both sensational. They're both injured. Tommy Raphael, probably one of the few bright spots for Wales in the Six Nations, unbelievable at the breakdown. He's injured as well. You're taking three of their best, probably four players or five players out of their starting team. So whatever the chance they had of going to the Aviva and springing a surprise, and then allied to that, Leinster are welcoming back Andrew Porter, Hugo Keane, and a couple of lads who had some injury doubts. I just can't see this being anything other than a fairly comprehensive Leinster win. I think it's not that they'll be thinking of it like that, but it'll be tuning up for the big one next Saturday, which they'll know by the time the game kicks off, whether it's La Rochelle and the Aviva or the Stormers. Either of those will be a massive test. Obviously, I think we're all hoping we get another Leinster-La Rochelle clash. But in terms of this game, like, Leinster have played Leicester three times in the last two seasons, and they've been comprehensive winners every single time. I don't see that changing tonight. I think Leinster... I think there'll be tougher tests to come. This one, especially with Leicester's injuries, I just don't see them being able to muster a massive resistance.
Okay. What about Munster then? Maybe a little bit more on their plate going away to Northampton. It's a tough one.
Yeah, this is the game of the weekend for me. I can't wait to see this. It's a pity it's a 12:30 kickoff and that it clashes with the Ulster game, because obviously we like to watch all the Irish provinces. Having Snyman fit is massive. He hasn't played a Champions Cup game, I don't think, for them yet. Like, so having him available, you can't make that. Like, even don't play against the Ospreys, I know it was only the Ospreys, but he was just a class above. He just looks like an absolute wrecking ball out there. So I give Munster a decent chance here. To be fair to Northampton, they've been the class of the English Premiership this year, but the jury is still out about the overall standard. They're very entertaining games and they're playing against each other and beating each other. Whether that can step up the Europe, Now they obviously beat them in Thorn Park, so that goes without saying that they're a good team. But this will be different. That was a rainy day. Northampton rolled up their sleeves, which is actually different to how they usually play, because are quite a front foot team. I think this will be a close one. I wouldn't be shocked if Munster produced an upset. Now they'd have to go away to the Bulls most likely next, so it'll be a tough road to get to Croke Park and a potential meeting with Leinster. But I can't wait to even see Jack Crowley versus Finn Smith, two of the young up and coming out halves in European rugby. I think it's going to be a real cracker. I think it'll be a very close game. I fancy Munster potentially just to shade it.
Yeah, I was impressed with Crowley. I hope you're right. I just feel Northampton are a tough side at home. They really are. And it's, you know, the weather conditions as well. It's not forecast great, but you wouldn't know how that could affect the game. It could make it into a slog. And then it's just, maybe it will come down to which pack of forwards wanted more. And maybe Munster have that little bit more bite based on that. So that could dictate a couple of things, but it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But hopefully you're right on that one. So Leinster, not too much difficulty. Munster to shade it, hopefully, is the call on that one. What did you make of that thing about Frisch declaring for France? Did you make much of it, or just, you know, so be it?
That makes sense. Yeah, open France, he is. And I know there was, I think people were recircling in coach when he first, France probably shown no interest with him at point when Fabien Galthié, you know, shrewd man that he is, came calling over the years to keep in touch. I don't blame him for having his head turned. And also, he's looking at a vista of Ringrose, Aki, McCluskey, Henshaw. There's probably no centres that would be harder to break into than Ireland at the moment. So, yeah. Funnily enough, France is probably a better avenue for him. So I don't begrudge him at all. He hasn't been capped by Ireland. He is French. He's been great for Munster. He helped them win the league last year. I can see from a Munster perspective why they'd be gutted or fuming, but I don't think capping him and forcing him to stay in Ireland is the answer. I don't think that that's ever the answer. If he decides to leave and go back to France and get paid a lot of money to play for Toulon and play for France, I say wish him luck. Obviously, Munster fans probably feel differently, but he helped them win the league. He's been a great player for them, and he's not gone yet. He has another year in his deal, so they'll either buy him out and they'll get a bit of money, or he'll play for one more season and they'll get that out of him. But yeah, I expect him to go back, and I suppose it is what it is. He is French at the end of the day, like similar to John Klein when his head was finally turned. Like I can see why they do it.
Time to turn our attention to GAA now, and I'm delighted to be joined in studio by the one and only Sean Lane, who was in the hot seat last week and did such a wonderful job in my absence. Morning, Sean. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
Did you enjoy last week?
Bits of it. Well, very nervous at the start, but we got into a bit of a rhythm all right.
It didn't sound that way. It sounded like you've been doing it a long time, so thanks for giving me the break, and well done. But there was a bit of camogie to talk about as well.
Yeah, Reggie, from a ladies' perspective, we're getting right down to the business end, and we'll hear from Orla Nolan in a short while about the ladies' National League final. But the camogie, and we'll cover them in depth next weekend, the 1A final will be between Galway and Tipperary. Tipperary haven't contested a final for a long time, 20 years. So it's nice to see them back, and it's an extra team at the top. Galway had a tremendous win against Cork, who are the All-Ireland champions, to get to that final. And I suppose one that I have a huge interest in, the 1B final will be contested by Dublin and Wexford. Dublin lost the first game to Wexford, funny enough. But they're after going on a roll and winning four games in a row, and they closed it out last weekend in O'Toole Park, where they did a good comprehensive win and a very, very good second half, where they come up and beat Antrim 16 points to 9. On the other side, Wexford were beaten by Limerick, but look at Wexford had qualified for the final. So really looking forward to those two finals next weekend, Reggie, and the Camogie, and that'll be the National League, and the Camogie finished. And so we'll certainly do our level best to cover that and give it a due respect.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, of course, as you said there in your intro, the big day this week, of course, is the National League final, and Orla Nolan, two-time All-Ireland medal winner and two All-Stars as well to boot, quite a CV, is on the line to talk to us as well about that. Good morning, Orla. How are you?
Morning, good, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful, thanks, wonderful. No doubt you'll be keeping a close eye on that National League final, Armagh versus Kerry. Looking forward to it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's set up to be a very good game. You know, the two teams had a great National League. So hopefully they both go after, you know, they both back themselves to it for tomorrow, and then we'll see who comes out on the right side.
Yeah, good morning, Orla. How are you doing? Sean here, how are you?
Morning, John. Great, thanks.
Good, good. Just, I suppose, on the balance, I mean, seven games, I know Dublin lost the first two, but on balance, I suppose, Armagh and Kerry, are they probably the two teams that just deserve to be in the final?
Yeah, I think after, you know, all the seven games, I think those are the two that have kind of come out on top. They've had, you know, they've had a mix of good wins for themselves, but then they've also shown that they can grind out results when they need it, you know, when they were kind of, when they're in those games where they knew if they just got over the line that they'd be in the final, they managed to get out on top. So I'd say on the balance, you know, they've grinded it out when they had to, but they've also shown like some really good form in games too. So yeah, you have to give it to the two of them.
Yeah, and where, Orla, would you see their strengths up front? I mean, there's some great players up front on both sides, but what do you think got them through these, you know, the games for the, where they both ended up, accumulated the first and second most number of points?
Yeah, like as you say, they're both up top. You know, you can't go without saying, you know, Amy Mackin is such an incredible player, and then Louise Niemeyer Hertig on the other side is, I'd probably up there the same. You know, both players of the year in their own right. You know, they're both capable of scoring. They're both capable of creating stuff if it's not kind of, if the supply is not there for them. But you know, there's supply lines there for this year for the two of them. You know, you've Kelly Mackin and Caroline Holland feeding it into Amy. And then you've Niamh Carmody, Anna Galvin, you know, they've been incredible in getting Louise on the end of things. And then they've had players that to step up as well. Like Emma Dunneen's been very impressive this year. Hannah Donoghue is coming in strong so far. So yeah, as you say, up front, they're both, you know, formidable. But then they also have defenders that are, you know, they'll relish taking on players like that.
Yeah.
They'll really enjoy the challenge to step up and kind of show that they can make one or two of those players that can make a difference quiet on their day. So, you know, I'd say all over the park is where it's going to come down. Like, you know, it's just one person might step up this tomorrow and yeah, that'll be the winning of it.
Yeah, and I suppose, just if I picked out a game where I saw yourselves playing Kerry in Parnell Park, I was at that, just on the day, Kerry just seemed to be, now I know you were very understrength, but I just thought Kerry were at the back, they were very, very strong that day against Dublin. I think Dublin only scored 6 or 7 points.
Yeah, and it's one that we'll, you know, we wouldn't have been the happiest with when, you know, yeah, a good defence can keep you out. We like to be up there shooting. But, you know, hats off to them when they can stop you. You know, that's a sign of a good team when they have their defenders doing the job and then the forwards up the other end.
Yeah.
And put it over the bar.
Absolutely. And from your own perspective, I mean, who do you see winning this game? I mean, give us your, having played against both teams, who do you think will come out on top?
Oh, as I said, you know, like there's strength all over the park. It's a really tough one to pick, but I think maybe Kerry, you know, they've a lot of experience playing in Croke Park, and Armagh would too, having won Division 2 last year. So I'm going to say Kerry to edge it. Just they've been there a few more times so far, and but you know, I wouldn't begrudge an Armagh win either.
Yeah. But and I suppose, as you said, rightly said, that Armagh won the Division 2 final last year. That's a fantastic achievement to come from Division 2 to Division 1 and be participating in the Division 1 final, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually something that's kind of happened quite regularly enough in the last couple of years for in the women's league. You know, Kerry have done it, Meath have done it. So it's great to see these teams that are, you know, playing, you know, they can compete Division 2 and then they come up and they have no trouble transitioning over. So it's great to have like such so many teams that are able now to compete at the top. So it's brilliant to see for the game.
Yeah, very good. And I suppose, look, I have to ask you a question from a Dublin's perspective. You're probably disappointed that you didn't qualify for the final, because I know it was down to the last day if results went a certain way. I think if Kerry were beaten or draw, based on you beating Armagh, you would have been through to the final yourself. But how would Dublin view their own National League and how are preparations for Championship going, Orla?
Yeah, as you say, you know, disappointed to not be in. It's a big day tomorrow, so disappointed not be able to get some silverware up for grabs. But I think there's positives to take from the league. A lot of players got game time. You know, there was colleges matches on at the same time too, so yeah, lots of football has been played. So we're just focusing now, focusing on Championship and looking forward to, you know, with the sun coming out and getting to train in the nice weather and see where it takes us.
Very good.
I think we're all looking forward to a bit of sun, Orla, at this stage. It wouldn't be any harm. It would help everybody's mood. Thanks a million for all of that, Orla. Great chatting to you, and we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Thanks very much. Thanks.
Take care. You. That's Orla Nolan there. As I said, two-time All-Ireland winner, two All-Stars as well. Fantastic player, giving us all of those insights in what should be a very interesting National League final as Armagh take on Kerry as well. So looking forward to that. Okay, time to turn our attention to the hurling. And of course, I suppose, Sean, Limerick were somewhat disappointing the last day for many, and surprisingly didn't get the result again. That would have been a surprise for a lot. It's too soon to say that it's the start of a decline for Limerick or anything like that.
But you know, Reggie, there's some people are looking at the match and saying, oh well, he didn't chase back and he didn't do this, they're getting tired or whatever. And you know, you can argue all you want, but I mean, if you're John Coyley, and just take it, if you're John Coyley waking up this morning, Reggie, would you prefer now going in playing Clare in a National League final and have to play them in the championship in 2 weeks' time, or would you like to get up, you know, and meet every the whole panel and say, right, we're going to train here for 2 hours, we're going to have a bit of lunch, and we're going to talk about how we get ourselves right for championship?
I find that difficult, Sean, because yeah. I tell you why. For me, everything you take part in, you should want to win. So, I know exactly where you're coming from. They say this every year about the championship. It's all about the All-Ireland. The league doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. But that's like saying to Leinster, don't worry about the URC, don't even play in it. Just play the Champions Cup. That's the way I feel about it. But I do understand what you're saying as well. It's nice to have that extra time to prepare.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Reggie. And you know, it's usually the people that aren't in the league final
that are saying it.
But like, if you know, from John Coyley point of view, if you said to him, you know, with two or three weeks to go in the championship, that he'd have Aaron Gillan back, Keen Lynch back, Sean Finn back, he has them back. Now, Reggie, they weren't good the last day against Kilkenny, but it's great having them back. But Sean Finn hadn't played for a year, he has 3 weeks to get the legs right, to get the touch right, etc. And all three of those players, he found two really good players in Colin O'Neill and Adam English. There's two more that he adds to a panel that has won four All-Irelands in a row. So that's beefing up the panel. And look, the whole Kyle Hayes issue in the media, that's gone away from him now. So he can actually sit them down and say, right, let's take our minds back. And I would suggest that he doesn't take out the Kilkenny video and start analysing and say, well, you didn't do this and you didn't do that and we should do this. The one thing about this limiting, they know how to do it.
So
it's a matter of getting their minds back exactly. 9 months and say, we've unfinished business here with a five in a row, lads. Let's get going.
And
let's get cracking
at that. Talent, that's
exactly.
Sure.
So he has it. He's a big job, but if he works in the psychological approach, I'd say they won't be far off.
Oh, I'm by no means writing them off. They'd still be my favourites for the championship. Yeah. But it's just, you know, I find it like you said, there, players come back from injury, another game at high level gives them that little bit more game time under their belt and they could be even more prepared. But look, who am I to say what the right way to play hurling is? They know what they're at, as I said, four in a row and they're going for five. I thought Kilkenny looked really strong against Limerick, so does that make them favourites for this evening?
Well, Reggie, they're my favourites for this evening. I won't go through the whole team, but if you just talk about a few points in it, one, to win an All-Ireland, you have to have a smashing goalie, and look at, they've been beaten in four finals since they won one in the All-Ireland. They were beaten in the National League final fairly comprehensively last year with Limerick. So Kilkenny are going to want silverware. They would be my favourites. I think they're the best goalie. I think they have tremendous backs. They have a man marker in Mikey Butler. They have, if they want to win ball in the sky, they've Paddy Deegan and you know, Hugh Lawler. Midfield, I see the Kilkenny team has picked. You have Keen Kenny from the Villages playing there, so he's got great legs and he's accurate enough. But I do think the one thing that'll swing it for Kilkenny, they've unearthed Billy Ryan, which is an extra forward. But it's funny, Ballyhale didn't contest the All-Ireland series this year, and they were beaten, as you remember, by a last minute score by O'Loughlin Gales in the Kilkenny final. But I mean, that gave TG Reid, Owen Cody and Adrian Mullen a little bit of downtime, and they're actually playing out of their skin. And the last day, that, you know, they have a couple of guys on the bench, Blanchfield and John Donnelly, they're all big guys. I just think that Derek Ling has done a lot of work with these guys. There's great tradition, as we know, there. Kilkenny will want to win this. And Kenny in a really good spot, Reggie, because from a championship perspective, and we just spoke about it, you know, everybody knows Kilkenny are going to be in a Leinster final, and at worst they're going to be toured in the group, so they're going to be in the All-Ireland series. So they can really, really have a cut at this. From a Clare point of view, Look, at I was very impressed with Clare across the whole National League, Reggie. They had some brilliant wins. They beat Cork in Ennis. They beat Kilkenny in Ennis by 3 points. And we talked about that the last day where they won with the last two or three scores of the game. Mark Rogers is really playing well. John Conlon has settled in back at centre-back. But the one guy that, to me, is really standing out is this David Fitzgerald guy. They had a smashing win against Tipperary in the semi-final, Reggie. They absolutely blitzed them. Now, Tip did themselves no favours, Reggie. They must have missed between, I think they had four different free takers, Reggie, and they missed about seven scorable frees. So that's an issue for Tipperary. But I just think that that Clare, kind of, they're all talk about that Clare have, you know, would be the best team and the nearest team to Limerick. I just genuinely feel that Kilkenny have passed them out. Maybe I'm wrong. Brian Lohan will want a little bit of silverware, and I think it's going to be a cracker, Reggie. It's on this evening, not tomorrow, at 7:30, so hopefully it's in Turles, so hopefully the weather won't absolutely
destroy it
with puckouts and breeze, etc, etc.
Well, Kilkenny will be favourites, but Clare did beat them earlier in the year, and you know, they'll fancy their chances, though, putting it up.
Oh, they will, Reggie. Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And as I say, you know, Clare do play Limerick in the first round of the championship on the 21st of April. But having said that, there'll be, you know, this passion in Clare to bring a little bit of silverware back to the county. They've been there or thereabouts for the last 4 or 5 years, but they've won nothing. And, you know, interestingly, I just look back, Kilkenny did beat Clare in two All-Ireland semi-finals, won very, very comprehensively 2 years ago. And even last year, you might remember Owen Murphy's brilliant save at the death where Clare nearly got it, but they didn't get over the line. And and look at, you know, the facts outside of Croke Park might help Clare as well. So, but it's looking going to be a cracker of a game to Stephen, Reggie.
Absolutely. It's been a good league overall, it has to be said. I think teams like Kilkenny, Clare, you know, Waterford, Tip to an extent, obviously looking at Limerick, but I think maybe the league has been a bit of an eye opener for people thinking that the All-Ireland was a bit of a foregone conclusion, that there are no other teams that will challenge and can challenge and have challenged and have beaten Limerick.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, if you go through them, and we won't go through them all, but let's start with even Joe Fortune and Westmeath. Some of the performances Westmeath have had were brilliant, so they've got something out of it. Even talk about Dublin. Dublin started the league really poorly, but ended up beating Antrim and beating Westmeath. But they'll be very happy with Donald Burke and Chris Crummy and back from the team and having you know, trained for 5 or 6 weeks, but also having some game time. Henry Shevlin will be looking from a Galway perspective. He's Fintan Burke now, found from Thomas's as a full back. He's Aidan Toohey back as a wing back. He's Dahi Burke back from injury. I still think he'll be a little bit shy, Reggie, up front. I mean, he has brought back Johnny Glynn as a big man in the attack. I still think he'll be shy a couple of forwards on that. The other two, and we won't, as I said, cover them all, but from a Wexford point of view, Keith Rosser would be very, very happy. He's unearthed at Seamus Casey and Keen Bourne. And the last day, you know, they were well beaten by Cork, but they didn't have Rory O'Connor, they didn't have Lee Chin, they didn't have Conor McDonald. So when he gets everybody ready, he'll have learned an awful lot from the league, and he had three draws in the league, and they played Dublin in the first match. But the one to watch would be Cork. Pat Ryan, they started and lost the first two games, Reggie, and you'd be saying, gee, maybe they'll be in 1B next year. But they came out and had three great wins. They beat Waterford, they beat Offaly, and the last day they beat Wexford, so, and that was in Wexford Park. So Pat Ryan will be very happy with that. He's unearthed Alan Connolly, who's got three goals. Declan Dalton got 1-7 in a league game, and Jack O'Connor has been consistent. So a brilliant league game. I think every manager will be out with the pen, taking it from behind the ear and saying, this is what I've learned. We'll come back and have a few changes from last year. And Reggie, you know, the championship starts on 24th of April. Can't wait for them. There'll be some cracker of games.
Okay, it's time to turn our attention to football now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
Very good indeed, thanks. Bit of a disappointing result last night for the women. 1-0 to France. I suppose many people may have felt that it could have been worse, but I know that Eileen Gleeson felt that there was some good green shoots there, and there were chances, but I think France were just a little bit better than us.
Yeah, they were far better, Reggie, to be honest with you. Particularly in the first half, they totally dominated the game. And when you concede so early, I suppose you are fearing the worst. But to be fair to the girls, they reacted quite well to that. Regrouped and I suppose just weathered the storm. And for that first half, they were just kind of just trying to keep France at bay. The second half then, I suppose, they made a couple of substitutions, and they reverted back to type, really, Reggie, with long throws and the pushed Louise Quinn up front. And I suppose the longer it remained 1-0, you always feel as though you're in with a chance. And that was the case, that when they got to the 70th, 75th minute, despite France totally dominating the game, they felt then that was their chance and they pushed on a little bit. And as I said, it was a few long balls into the box and a couple of long throws. But I never felt as though they were going to carve open a chance or never created a chance or a shot on goal. And I suppose that's the disappointment. Like, for all the criticism Vera Pauw took, and I was totally against that, she got us to a World Cup playing basically the exact same way. Then we heard all this nonsense about we're going to play this attractive brand of football, an expansive brand of football, which was coming out from the camp and the players. And we've seen nothing but the exact same thing last night. So I just felt all that talk and all that stuff, especially against the top teams, we're not going to play like that because we're not good enough to play like that against the top teams. Vera Pauw's approach was realistic and pragmatic and got us to a World Cup, and we're way off playing against the top teams, playing an attractive brand of football, that because we're so early in our development, in the infancy of women's football, and it's the first tournament we ever qualified for the World Cup. So I think they should just keep the head down, get on with the development, take the positives from last night and just keep developing.
And what about, you know, with the game coming up against Tuesday, trying to get that squad motivated? I mean, it's not an easy one against England. It's as difficult as it gets. So where would you, what would you like to see them change to maybe go out and have a go and try and get the result rather than just playing more of the same, as you said?
See, that's the thing, Reggie. I don't think against the elite teams we can go out and have a go, in the sense that, if you mean having a go, is take them on toe-to-toe. We can't. We're not good enough. We'll get annihilated if we take them on toe-to-toe. They'll totally dominate the game. They'll have all the possession. And it's a case of being realistic and pragmatic and setting up well and hopefully trying to hit them on the counter-attack. But the problem is, on a counter-attack, is that when you win the ball back after chasing for so long, that you have about 60, 70 yards trying to get up the pitch just to try and create an attack for yourself, and the distances are just too far. So I think the way they approached it last night is the right thing, what Eileen's done, and I think she should be honest in saying that. And the same thing against England, it'll be more of the same. And if we were to nick a goal on a set piece or a long throw or whatever, but I just felt the narrative around Vera and what they were trying to suggest, that Vera was holding them back and she was too defensive, was complete nonsense, because she was being realistic and pragmatic with what she had at her disposal to get us to a World Cup. And now we're seeing the exact same thing under a different coach.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Well, that'll have to change, or the results won't. Simple as that. So we'll see what happens in that space. Tuesday night against England will be interesting to see what they do or don't try and change, or what they're capable of. So we'll watch it carefully. Okay, turn our attention to League of Ireland. And interesting results is the only way I can describe it last night. Some surprises. Waterford getting a 1-0 win over Bowes. Probably a bit of a shock for Bowes.
Well, Reggie, the league has me baffled this year. Baffled, honestly. Every Friday night I'm saying, what is going on here? Some of the results. And as you say, that would have been a surprise one. I would have felt Bowes at home after coming off the back of a good result against Galway and Alan Reynolds' first home game in charge, that they would be capable of beating Waterford. Although Waterford are dangerous enough themselves, but that was a great result for Waterford away from home. You look around the other grounds as well. I would have fancied Shamrock Rovers, St. Pat's have had a slowish start by their standards from last year. A bit of pressure on John Daly, and they come up with a brilliant 2-1 win. Drogheda, who have been playing well but not getting the results, they're on the verge of beating Shelburne, who have been unbeaten the whole season. Yeah. I know it was only a late 93rd minute equaliser. So some of the results are just bonkers, Reggie. They really are. They have me baffled, but it's very competitive, and it's almost reminds me at the moment of the championship in England, where everybody is beating everybody and everybody's capable of beating everybody, it seems, at the moment.
Yeah, but you'd have to say it looks like a slip-up by Shelburne, only getting a 2-2 draw against Drogheda. And given the talent that's in that Rovers squad, they're sitting in fifth position on 12 points, 9 points behind the leader, Shelburne. And we were talking about it at the beginning of the season, saying red hot favourites, can't see anybody challenging them, can't see them getting beaten, league is theirs. And here we are, 8 matches into it for them, and they're down in fifth and losing to Pats like that.
Yeah, I agree totally, Reggie. It's been a poor start from them, as you say, sitting in fifth position. I thought they were red hot favourites at the start. I still think they're favourites to win it, but they need to start up in their game quickly. Now, they do have a lot of injuries at the moment. There was no Gaffney last night, no Kenny. They have a lot to come back in terms of Ferrugia is out, Jack Byrne, great players in the league, and they need to get them back quick because, as I say, it's beginning to hinder them now. They do, out of all the teams in the league, they do have a squad that can cater for injuries, but it's beginning to hit them hard now because, as you say, lying in fifth, losing to St. Pat's, who have had a slow start, as I said, to the season, that's a very disappointing result. And yeah, I'm sure Stephen Bradley, like as I keep saying the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's no panic buttons being pressed, but he'd certainly be concerned because to be sitting fifth, you don't want to give anyone a lead, especially Shelburne. And Derry picked up a good victory last night, got themselves back on track, you would think, because they've had a bad 3 games as well, only picking up 1 point. But that was a good win for them last night.
Yeah.
So there will be concerns from Stephen Bradley, no doubt.
Yeah, and work needs to be done sooner rather than later on that. Okay, going across the water then, I have to discuss the big one tomorrow, United versus Liverpool, obviously. I see Jurgen Klopp has implored Liverpool and United fans to show some class. There's been all that rivalry in the past and maybe some gesturing and things like that have gone on and caused trouble. But leaving that aside, football-wise, it should be a great game. It's hard to know these days what you're getting with United. They seem to have shown a bit more backbone in recent times, but it's still hard to know what you'll get with them. But it feels like Liverpool it feels like it's their title. I know it's very early days, but it still feels like it's going their way this year.
That's the Arsenal fan, and you say that, Reggie. You know,
getting nervous, negative.
Reggie, I said to you here 6 months ago or 9 months ago, Arsenal win the league.
Yeah.
Believe me, stick with me, Reggie. Stick with me.
Okay.
I know I still fancy Arsenal, but I agree with you. Just at the moment, not even at the moment, I suppose since Christmas, even the momentum that Liverpool have built up has been incredible, and they are seem to be on that bit of a steam train. But you could also say Arsenal are on a steam train, and so are Man City. So I think the race is going to be incredible as it is, and I don't think anyone can afford, never mind a loss, I don't think anyone can afford a draw, because that'll feel like a defeat now, because the other teams are so relentless in their pursuit of what they're going after. So I think Liverpool will win. I think Liverpool will drop a couple of points towards the end of the season, but I don't think it'll be tomorrow. I think they'll beat Man United. Man United are just a rabble, really. I watched them during the week, and just when you think, you know, to show a bit of fight, as you say, to concede 2 goals, and that's not down to just switching off in a 97th minute. That's a culture that's been created over a period of time, because it's happened so often.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen to the great teams because they're concentrated for 90 minutes and they don't allow that happen, and they've leaders in the dressing room that don't allow that happen. It happens far too many times for Man United to say it's just a one-off. It happened against Brentford. It's happened earlier on in the season. They just switch off. They don't have those players that are in tune for a full 95, 98, 90, 100 minutes, whatever the case may be. And it's a cultural problem. And I don't think Ten Hag is the answer either. I think he'll lose his job at the end of the season. And I think there needs to be a major clear out, because it's the environment that's all wrong there, it seems to me, from the outside. I saw Rashford coming on the other night after 66 minutes and literally walking around the pitch, Reggie.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get away with that
lot,
at Arsenal.
Though. He does that a lot. You know, he comes in and out.
It's bad attitude.
You know, absolutely. That's what I mean.
Bad attitude.
Yeah.
You don't get away with that at the top clubs, at Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool. If you're doing that one of those teams at the moment, you won't be playing good luck, you know.
Yeah,
and that's the problem. And there's no accountability there. He's allowed to do that and nobody says anything.
It's pathetic when you say it. It drives me crazy. I cannot for the life of me work that out.
And there's talent there. There's talent in the boy, but,
absolutely.
You know, it's no good having the talent. Phil Foden, look at the talent he has, but look at the work rate.
Yeah,
and that's the difference.
Yeah, it comes back,
Reggie,
and gets
three. That is the difference.
You know, and then like Pep, you know, whatever you might say about him, maybe he's doing it for the cameras, maybe whatever, when he's giving these public and tongue lashings out. But it gets responses. You know,
it's demands, Reggie. You know yourself, elite level sport. You know yourself. It's demands. If the manager's putting demands on you and expecting the best, well, then that's what you have to deliver. And if you're not delivering it, you won't play it. And that's what it boils down to. And some people say, oh, is he too hard and too demanding? It's not. That's what the best do. You know, that's what the best do. And that's the problem there at Man United at the moment. So I think Liverpool will beat them, but I still think they'll drop a couple of points somewhere. I'm not sure where. And I think Arsenal win the league, Reggie, so there we go.
Over City, just to finish, because I'm out of time, but over City, you still think Arsenal can get the job done?
Yeah, I think
with
it's
City coming strong again.
I think it's Yeah, I think it's between Liverpool and Arsenal, actually. I know the three of them are in the race, but I think the winner will come from Liverpool and Arsenal.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.